Okay, number one, this is a podcast of the cinema.
This is important.
Not of The Bachelor.
Not of the television.
Not of the television. That's LKTV. We'll talk about that in a bit. Number two, too soon. I just got rid of all The Bachelor. I shook off all The Bachelor and Bachelor in Paradise and Bachelorettes in like, what, September?
Nick deserves and it's to find
and then
love.
Christmas and Halloween and Thanksgiving went whoosh, and now it's back?
Yes.
Who?
It is Nick.
Oh God, no, he's boring.
Well,
who's Nick? I don't even know.
Here's the thing, is we met him late.
You're listening, I'm sorry. Linoleum Knife, the podcast of the cinema, is brought to you by me, Dave White, and Alonzo Duralde. Say hello.
Hello. Hello.
Okay.
Hello, nice people.
Alonzo Duralde is the co-host of this show, along with me, Dave White. We're film critics. We're married to each other. The lady voice you hear is our niece Pilar, who happens to be here hanging out.
Who is not mic'd, but...
Not mic'd and telling us about The Bachelor. Okay, so Nick is coming back.
Okay.
Which one is
We're going to talk about movies in just a minute.
So, apparently...
And non-television thing.
Why don't you turn your mic?
No, okay, what? Here, okay. Here, just say...
All right, we met Nick kind of late. Apparently, on his season, when he was just a contestant, he was the villain. And right.
Oh, so he's not from the JoJo season.
No.
Then I don't know.
So then he does one round on Bachelor in Paradise, and then this, we met him on his second round.
Round at Bachelor
So
in
we
Paradise.
Came late, when he yes. was like more whiny and mopey. And like,
so, yeah.
So this guy's already a lifer, basically.
Irritating yes. person.
At 35, still looking for love.
I might abstain.
You did your duty on this one.
Duty is right.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I would rather watch The Bachelorette.
Yeah. It's more
than
fun
The Bachelor.
Document.
And here's why. It's more fun, as you were just saying.
Yeah.
I'm about to stomp all over your sentence. More fun to watch men humiliate themselves
yes.
than it is to watch women be denigrated.
No, that's
Just
we
because
have,
I'm a
we
guy.
Have the rest of television for that.
I'm a guy, and I know that it's no fun to watch ladies be upset and hurt. It's much more fun to watch guys lose their minds.
Hence, Finding Prince Charming.
Exactly. If it were Evan, Dr. Boner, then I would have to watch it.
That oil
because
spot.
I hate him. And I would hate, I hate him and want to, and have to watch him.
Ugh.
Nick is not interesting enough to me to watch.
That's true.
And I don't want to watch ladies, I don't
want
to watch ladies fall all over themselves for him.
Yeah.
He's a dullard. Sorry, okay. Nick, I hope you're not listening, but I think you're kind of boring. Maybe you're not boring in actual life. Maybe TV just makes you boring. I mean, you're good looking.
Okay, we have a lot of ground to
cover. We're talking about movies. On this show,
we have so much ground to cover.
You're banished. Back to the couch.
Bye.
We have not, because we haven't done a show since Star Wars.
No, I know.
We took Christmas off.
We did.
And the movie
wasn't that great.
It was lovely.
Wasn't it great to take Christmas off?
It was really lovely.
It was really nice
to have some time off.
There was so much eating.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a vacuum cleaner.
Yep.
I got great books. You gave me 3 books on Robert Bresson.
I did.
Notes on the Cinematograph.
Mm-hmm.
The new one that came out just this year, Bresson on Bresson.
Yeah.
And then a critical biography, I guess you could call it. That's
Something
just
like
called
that, yeah.
just called Bresson.
Yeah.
In addition to the other huge collection of critical writing I have. So now I have 4 Bresson books.
Mm-hmm.
And I am no longer going to be the lady who collects owls.
I don't know if there are any more Brisson books.
Okay, I'm just letting you and the world know.
You're good.
I've seen the films. You know, like, other people need to read these books. I mean, I'm going to, but you know what I mean?
Yes.
Yes.
You're good.
I have what I need until further notice. But I was thrilled to get them because I've never read Notes, which is the old thing that he wrote. Uh-huh. And that's easy because it's all like five sentences to a page.
You know? His pensées.
His thoughts. His thoughts. Not to be confused with
Thoughts.
Thoughts by T-Boss. Her book of poetry.
And sadly, she does not spell it T-H-O-T-S.
No. The, oh God, that vacuum.
I'm so happy you're happy with the vacuum.
I can't stop loving the vacuum.
Then I will never apparently have to vacuum again.
No, you're not allowed to touch my vacuum.
Fine.
It's so good.
I endorse this.
My new vacuum. This was a gift from, first of all, a very, very, very generous friend.
Yes.
This is a generous friend who gives generous gifts to everyone, not just me. So I don't feel weird about this generous friend giving me a gift right. that I now know the price of because I was explaining the vacuum to someone online and I looked it up to make sure I had the name right. Mm-hmm. And along came up like all the price points, depending on where you buy it. But even the cheapest price point, mm-hmm. was a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Thanks, generous friend. I'll come over and vacuum your house for the rest of your life. Like whenever Stem you need it, I'll bring it to. I'll bring the vacuum. Man, it's good. The Dyson Absolute, no cord.
I
weighs about 5 pounds.
I got an upgraded Apple TV, which means now we have Filmstruck.
Yes.
Which I'm very excited about.
You watched Bienvenido, Mr. Marshall.
Yes.
A
movie I have been hearing about my entire life and have never been able to get my hands on.
As a child of Spain,
yes.
This was an important addition.
This is a big deal.
This is a Spain thing that you movie. Needed to watch. A yes. big deal Spain movie.
Yes. Yeah. Very entertaining.
What's it about?
It's about a small, impoverished town in the 1950s, and yeah. they hear that an American delegation is coming through town with the Marshall Plan.
Tell people who don't pay attention in history class, what was the Marshall Plan?
The Marshall Plan was a thing the United States did after World War II that was super smart, and we've never done it again, even though we totally should have, which was basically after Europe was destroyed in World War II, to make sure, or at least to attempt to sway governments into being our friends and not, like, doing dastardly things.
Right.
We swept in and gave them lots of money and built schools and provided food and, you know, like,
right.
just, you know.
We were good world citizens.
We followed guns with butter.
For a moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, so this impoverished Spanish town decides that they have to, like, put on a big show of sort of what they would jokingly call typical Spanishness for the American visitors. So, like, all the women are dressed as flamenco dancers.
Right.
And all the men are dressed as toreadors.
Yeah.
You know, so that when the delegation comes to town, they can, like, impress them. And then everybody in town has this, like, wish list of the thing they want. Everybody gets to ask for one thing from the Americans. It's
really... Like, each individual person?
Yes.
I need...
Yeah.
I need a Dyson Absolute.
It's like, do I need a plow or do I want a harmonica? Kind of, you know,
right.
That sort of thing. Yeah, no, it's very funny. It's a Berlanga, a very big deal Spanish filmmaker. And yeah, I thought it was very entertaining. I'm glad I saw it.
Has the audio problem been corrected?
It has. We are way louder now.
No, not us.
Oh.
We vacillate back and forth between apt and inept.
It's true.
Who's? Technologically and audiologically. But has the Filmstruck audio problem been corrected?
It was not a problem on this last movie that I watched. It might
Bienvenido.
Be, yes. Okay. It might be that restarting the Apple TV made the difference because I had a few issues when we watched Umbrellas of Cherbourg the other night and when
women,
I watched
Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown.
But after rebooting it seems to have gotten better.
That was so. New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
Women on the Verge.
Yeah.
What a great New Year's Eve.
Yes.
It was raining.
Mm-hmm.
and we didn't go anywhere.
Nope.
I fell asleep at 8:30.
I was in bed by 9:30.
You fell asleep at 9:30.
And we old.
And I don't think of it like that. I think of it as we're smart. Yeah. Because, and you go out in Los Angeles on New Year's Eve on a rainy night.
Yeah.
You're asking.
On any rainy night.
For death.
On rainy amateur drunkie night, forget it.
Yeah. You're shake hands with danger is what you're doing. Right. And I don't like danger. I like to be safe. And that's why I stay home.
Yes. We are rounding that corner where I'm always a little dissatisfied after Christmas is over that I don't understand that. I didn't bake enough. I didn't go see enough lit up homes. I didn't go caroling. Like, I don't know. There's just stuff.
The night we planned to go see all the rich people and their house lights,
yes,
it poured rain.
Correct.
We broke a record. Did you know this? We have had more rain in Los Angeles in 1 month in December than in the past 6 years.
Wow. Is the drought over?
No.
Okay, well.
No. This is just the beginning of what we need.
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway,
you stop talking for just a moment. I'm going to tell you about your life.
Okay, you do that.
You did all kinds of stuff.
I know.
In December.
I know.
You packed your December so much with Christmassy activity that it flew by. And because it went so fast, when it was done, you thought, oh, it's over. When all you did was, you know, have a tree decorating party and a Christmas Eve dinner that we hosted and a couple dinners for friends who came over and you know, had nice Christmas times here. And
we went to
Disneyland for Christmas at Disneyland. We went to the Arrow to see the annual screening of It's a Wonderful Life. We went Christmas shopping together at a stupid fancy mall. We did all of kinds of things.
I know. I didn't say it.
And each year,
yes,
on December the 26th, you say, it wasn't enough.
It's never enough.
Totally, it's enough.
It's never enough for me.
You have plenty and have experienced plenty and have actually, I'm going to really let you know what's up with your life. You have actually more than your share.
Oh, I see.
Of joy and Christmas happiness.
Look.
Yeah.
I'm watching the Hallmark Channel, and Alicia
Let's
Witt,
say, hey, by the way, speaking of that.
Alicia gets to go to, like,
speaking of you watching the
Christmassy small town.
Speaking of you watching the Hallmark Channel, how many hours did you spend in December on the couch watching the Hallmark Channel?
I can't even tell you.
Well, perhaps next year you should cut that in half. Seeing as how I think you might have actually watched all of them this year. You and Bibbs. Y'all ought to just go off and live in your own little Hallmark world together.
I can't help if they know
have some
what
Folgers
I like.
Coffee
they,
together while you're at it.
They know how to make me feel cozy at the holidays. That Hallmark Channel.
I'm like, we could watch My Night at Maud's again, and you're like, no. No, 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 Hallmark movies.
Candace Cameron Bure is looking for love. And then later, Lacey Chabert has cookies to make.
Unless that movie was directed by our excellent friend Jim Fall, and I know he's made like 12 or 17 of those. Okay, like 17 of those. And I don't care. Unless he's behind it, I don't care. Unless we have a friend in the movie playing Santa Claus, and his co-star is Mariah Carey.
And his director?
And also his director is Mariah Carey. Then I don't care. I'm a stunt watcher of the Hallmark Channel.
It has to be related to someone we know doing it. Did I ever say, Dave, come sit with me on the couch and watch this Hallmark
Actually,
Channel?
Actually, yes.
Not true.
Yes, and
never.
I said, no, I have very important things to do.
I never said, come watch a Hallmark Channel. It was my own secret shame.
No, no, no. There were at least one or two nights where you're like, baby, come sit on the couch with me. I'm like,
that's because they just didn't want to see you go to sit on the couch. It wasn't because I wanted to watch the Hallmark Channel. So what? So if I'd watched less Hallmark Channel, I would have worked more caroling into my life.
You would have. Maybe you would have gone caroling.
Look, I mean,
up and down our block.
That would have gone over real.
Singing. Can you imagine? Okay. Walking up and down our block just singing to yourself, someone would have called the cops.
Oh, totally. Yeah, and I wouldn't blame them.
I'm surprised when neighbor and close friend Gary Cotty walks down our street and I can hear him a block up the street because he sings out loud to himself with his headphones on.
Right.
Like a wild person.
Yeah. You must be the lucky star.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm surprised they haven't called the authorities on him.
I did bake cookies this year, though.
You did. They were really good.
Yes, thank you.
They were so good, and with so many delicious and nutritive ingredients in them. Oats, oatmeal.
Walnuts.
Coconut, walnuts. The only not good thing for you in those cookies was the chocolate chips. And those become good because they bring pleasure. I was eating those for breakfast. They felt like little fiber.
Little cookie bars.
Little fiber pucks that actually tasted good. Okay, so...
It was a swell Christmas.
Movies and that
you
saw.
You got me nice things also.
Yeah.
I'm not complaining. Everything that happened in Christmas was great. I just always want more.
More than your share. You've had more than your share. It's a wonderful life for you.
It is. Okay, so we are trying to catch up now because the movies did not take a vacation on Christmas.
Who cares?
So there's been a bit of a pile up here.
Well, we're just going to keep doing episodes until we catch up.
Yes, we are. And we are. We will be doing our year in review episode very soon with some of our favorite special guests of the past. So there's that to look forward to. But in the meantime, we're just going to get caught up on some of the late December releases that we did not talk about.
Why don't you talk about that dumb Assassin's Creed movie that you saw and I refuse to go see, even though my lady, Marion Cotillard, is in it. Also, my other lady, Charlotte Rampling, is in it.
Yes.
Not going. Maybe it'll come on TV sometime in the next year or two. Or 6 months. And I will fast forward to their parts. Maybe that's what I'll do.
Yes, it co-starred the Academy Award winning actress that Wendy Williams refers to as that Marion.
No. That French lady.
That French lady,
yeah.
Marion.
Yeah.
Marion something. Okay, I didn't want to see it either. Don't get it twisted. I had to go because Christy Lemire went, and so she guilted us into going to see everybody else on what the flick to go see it.
Oh, did all of you have to go?
Well, it turned out, but the
just Matt, you, right?
And Bibbs, because all right. Matt was not feeling well, and Ben was out of town or something.
Oh, really?
Uh huh.
Conveniently out of town.
I know. How nice for you. So Assassin's Creed is based on a video game, so you pretty much know going in that it's going to be a nightmare. And it is maybe less terrible than other video game movies, but that's like tastiest crap sandwich territory.
Yep.
You know? Michael Fassbender plays a guy who has spent his life on the run ever since he saw his father killed his mother in something that seems sort of ritual based, and then when he's on death row he is put to death, but then he wakes up and he's suddenly in Spain in this high tech facility run by Marion Cotillard, and it turns out that Fassbender is the what's the word I want here? Descendant, thank you.
The potentate.
No, he's the descendant of this like 15th century Spaniard who was part of the... There's two factions. There's the Knights of Templar who are trying to find this thing called the Apple of Eden that contains the code behind...
The apple.
Yeah, exactly. Juju apple. That contains the coding behind man's free will. And then the assassins who have always been trying to keep it from them because the Templars wanted to use it to control the universe, blah, 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 blah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's one of those.
This is based on what? Is it a comic book or a video game?
Video game. All right, video great. Game. So there's a lot of...
Gamers, I need any gamer who knows this game, who has also seen the film...
Bibbs, if you...
To write in...
No. Watch our What the Flick clip, because Bibbs has played the game.
And I see.
He basically said they made a movie out of the most boring parts.
Okay, great.
Yes. So they hook him up to some doohickey, and they send him back through his genetic memory to the 15th century. And of course, now you've got him in 15th century Spain, surrounded by actual Spanish actors speaking Castilian. And then Michael Fassbender doing it phonetically.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
He pink ladies it.
Uh-huh.
Oh, good.
It's embarrassing. And lots
maybe,
of...
Maybe I have to watch
lots
this
Lots of running around and jumping and going to the place and getting the thing. And it's nothing. The cinematography is okay, but it's mostly just like, who cares? And it doesn't even like stay true to its own premise. Like, we're supposed to be seeing this stuff through the memories of the 15th century guy, and yet like the movie gives us these big sort of like helicopter, you know, establishing shots of the city. It's like, well, how would he have ever seen that, you know? Yeah, it's dopey.
What turns out to be the creed of the assassins?
They repeat.
Do they have a creed?
They do. It's basically about like there are no rules and fight for the thing that the it's stupid. It's directed by the guy that did the Macbeth that also had Fassbender and Cotillard in it.
Okay.
And it's the same cinematographer. And that that Macbeth, if you recall, was a bit much.
Well.
And so is this movie. Cotillard and Charlotte Rampling and Jeremy Irons all collecting paychecks. And Cotillard is supposed to be Jeremy Irons' daughter.
Well, she's what, 35?
No, it's not about the age. I'm talking about the accent.
And he's like, how old? 70?
He is straight up British, and she is what Kathy Griffin would call European.
Maybe Jeremy Irons was married to
Catherine Deneuve.
Catherine Deneuve or Jane Birkin, okay? And that way she was raised in France.
Well... It's
any number of scenarios could be constructed to make this true.
It's all stupid. So, let's move on.
Okay, we can move on to pick. Let's pick another one that you saw and I refuse to see.
Oh no! Why do I got to do all these in a row?
Sing,
oh, brother.
Sing a song. Sing out loud. Sing out strong.
Sing of good things.
Not bad.
Make it happy.
Not sad.
This movie is the latest from Illumination, who have become a thing, because they're the Minions studio and the Secret Life of Pets studio.
I like those Minions.
We never neither of us ever saw Secret Life of Pets, did we?
No.
No. Oh, well.
But I sure do like those Minions.
I like the Minions. I don't care about the Despicable Me movie so much, but I like the Minions. So this is like... Who thought this was a good idea?
I don't know what this is about.
It's about...
The trailer made me want to cut my eyes out.
It's about, okay, Matthew McConaughey is a koala bear.
Okay.
With a struggling theater. All right. So he decides he's...
Where does he live? Is it a city or is it Animal Town?
It's an Animal Town.
Okay.
He lives in Zootopia.
All right.
So he...
A suburb of Zootopia.
Basically.
Okay. Yes.
So to save the theater and raise money, he has a singing competition.
For the people, the other animals in Animal Town.
Yes.
All right.
So it's like, oh, great. Now that American Idol is gone and The Voice is dying, now here's a movie about another frickin' singing competition so we can have like more horrible covers because we didn't get enough of those in Trolls. So it's like, you know, Scarlett Johansson is a porcupine and... that guy from the Kingsman movies is a gorilla, and there's a bunch of little yappy dogs that sing like J-pop and the singing and then
give me more details.
Save the theater and
they save the theater with the singing contest.
Yes,
and everybody gets their chance to live their dreams.
Yes, so much dreaming and so much believing.
And everyone is happy at the end.
Yes.
Does anyone become a star singer for Animal Town?
No, but the gorilla does win the love of his father, who's a bank robber.
Okay.
And there's the one thing I liked was...
What does the gorilla sing?
I don't even remember.
Okay,
right. But Jennifer Saunders is snooty, so she's fun.
All right. What animal is she? One of them.
I forgot.
Okay. All right.
And somebody pointed out
you put this out of your head as quickly as you could.
Pretty much. All right. Filtered right out. Although somebody did point out that, like, having the one criminal in the movie be a giant black gorilla was maybe a little dicey.
Maybe.
Semiotically speaking.
Yes.
And I could see that argument making
Who
sense.
Who said that?
I don't remember. It was on Twitter.
A film critic.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just, it's nothing. I mean, look, it looks nice. The animals themselves are cute. You know, the actual character design and all that stuff is fine, but it's just, it's one of those movies that I kind of kept waiting for it to start, you know?
Yeah.
Like something is going to happen, right, that I'm going to get engaged.
I just had a gut feeling from the trailer. You know, I try not to watch trailers, but yeah, they
get you.
They get through to me somehow occasionally anyway. And I saw the trailer for this while watching, you know, while waiting for another film to start. Mm. And I thought, nope. I'm invoking iquitmovies.com privilege. And I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it. And there's one coming up in January that looks god-awful, too, and I can't remember what it is.
You'll have to be specific.
A kid movie.
Uh-oh, an not animated. The Underworld or the Resident Evil one?
No, those two. I'm bailing on those two. Uh-huh. Yeah. I got a life.
Yeah, your worst list is not going to be nearly as vivid as most people's.
I saw Collateral Beauty.
Well, I know.
So that's all that's all we need to talk about. Yeah.
There was and you did see.
And
saw Warcraft.
I saw Kevin Spacey as a cat.
That actually is not even close to being one of the
worst. What was that called? What
was
that?
Lives.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it was bad, but I saw much worse this year.
Mm.
Did you see X-Men Apocalypse?
I saw Believe.
Yes, you did.
The Christian
Ayn Rand movie.
Ayn Rand Christmas film.
Right.
I saw I Am Not Ashamed, the Christian Columbine film.
Right, that's true. You saw the Christian wrestling movie and the Christian
MMA. I saw the Christian wrestling movie. I saw the Christian MMA movie. Yeah. Okay. I got plenty.
All right. You had a full year.
I got plenty of things to talk about on the worst list when we do that episode.
Yes.
I saw the trailer for this and I thought, there's no. Life is short and I have a lot of things to do.
Like, I mean, I this movie never actively made me hate it the way I hated Trolls, but I literally just had that sensation of, like, when you're in the first few minutes of a movie and it's got to start engaging you and sometimes it takes a minute, this was 90 minutes of that minute. Like, it just, I never cared. And I was waiting for this moment when, oh, okay, now the movie's going to start and now there's going to be an actual, like, stakes and a story that I'm invested in. Nope.
Okay.
Oh, Reese Witherspoon's a pig. I forgot.
In real life or?
Insane. I just wanted to say that sentence.
By all accounts, she seems to be my kind of lady.
I'm looking forward to her HBO show.
She's got an HBO show coming?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
That Santa Barbara thing?
I don't know.
It's like, it's her and Nicole Kidman and somebody else.
Here's why I think she's my kind of lady. First of all, I like her all the time in pretty much any film.
Yes.
Except I'm not going to see Sing.
Right.
Furthermore, her production company is called Type A. I understand this.
We had a discussion over the New Year's Day weekend, which Happy Endings character are you? And it took Dave about 0.3 seconds to say, Jane.
I don't say that with pride.
No.
I don't say with pride that I have crippling
anal retention.
Maniacal tendencies toward order and being in control. However.
You do acknowledge them.
I acknowledge them. And when I see other people living successful lives that way.
Who have channeled it into
I aspire. Yes, I aspire to that. And then, like, she goes on Ellen. And she always brings Ellen a gift.
She's a Southern girl.
She never goes anywhere empty-handed.
You don't show up empty-handed.
And I believe in behaving with hospitality, which I see that she does.
I think I've probably told this story before.
Maybe.
I had a brief stint in Dallas when it was before I started around the time I was working at the film festival, there were other periods where I worked part-time as a publicist for one of the agencies in town that dealt with movie studios.
Stop. Wait. How did I not know? In 22 years of knowing you, how did
you
I not
know this story?
No.
Yes.
No.
I worked for this company called Moroccan Associates. That's my. I don't know if you've ever met my friend Christine Finnegan. She used to be my boss. They handled
all of
like,
this is news to me.
Oh, wow.
Name of a company is news to me.
They handled like
I thought I'd heard all your stories.
Nope. They handled like New Line and MGM and you know like some of the smaller kind of indie facing companies. And I wasn't there for very long, and I was always sort of part time. It was no big deal. But one of the movies that we worked on that we had a the talent flew in and we had to set up a junket day for. Was for The Man in the Moon.
Oh, that is a very good film.
It is a very good
film. Of the early 90s.
Yes. Yeah, this was before I moved to Los Angeles the first time. And so one of the people who came in for that movie was like 14-year-old Reese Witherspoon.
Wow.
And she was totally not a pain in the ass.
Huh. Great.
And she was from Nashville, so we talked about that. Because I had just graduated from Vanderbilt.
Right.
But yeah, she was great. And so I just remember thinking, that kid's going somewhere.
I also remember a quote from her. Where she was dissing one of her directors who had badmouthed her first.
Mm-hmm.
But let me say it differently. She was not dissing the director. The director badmouthed her.
Yes.
And said that she was impossible or something like that. And her response, her public response to this was, I show up on time and I'm ready.
Yeah.
And I just thought, ooh. You're so good. That is the perfect response.
That's when Dave put her picture up in his locker.
Yes, I did. I loved her from that moment. I liked her before, but I think I loved her from that moment.
Right.
What director was that? Someone who...
Well, I remember there was a co-star she had issues with because he was very laissez-faire, let's say. And she was like,
I don't like
type A productions,
I
baby.
I don't like laissez-faire. I like you do the thing that you're supposed to do. I watched Fences.
Oh,
finally.
Right. Okay, yes.
Today.
Yes.
On the awards screener mm-hmm. that you got in the mail.
Yes.
For Los Angeles Film Critics Association.
Yes.
Is it legal for me to have watched Fences on your awards screener?
You're my spouse.
I'm married to you and we live in the same house. I'm allowed to look at it with you.
I think so, yes.
Technically.
You could always say that I was there too, even though I took a nap while you watched it, because I'd already seen it in the Paramount screening room.
Yeah. It's not like we invited friends over and charged admission.
Right, or put it on the internet or anything.
We two are one.
That's right.
Yeah.
Legally speaking.
And in the eyes of God.
That I don't believe in such a thing, but sure.
I just like saying it.
I know. Okay, I had to describe the first two movies, so you explain what Fences is.
Fences is set in the 1950s in Pittsburgh. It is the sixth. First, it was a play.
Yes.
On Broadway in 1987. It was written in 83. It was on Broadway in 87. James Earl Jones and Alice and Mary Alice.
Oh, wow.
Were in it. Mary Alice won the Tony. I can't remember if James Earl Jones won the Tony. And I know August Wilson, the writer, has won a couple Pulitzer Prizes mm-hmm. for these plays. This was the sixth of ten play
cycle.
Pittsburgh-based cycle.
Right. It's each one is set in a different decade of the 20th century, right?
Okay, I guess.
That's my understanding.
All right. So this is about a man. Now the revival that recently happened on Broadway starred Denzel Washington and Viola Davis.
Correct.
And now this film version, screenplay by August Wilson,
right.
directed by Denzel Washington, yes. starring Denzel Washington and Viola Davis.
Screenplay apparently has an uncredited polish by Tony Kushner.
Okay. That makes sense.
Because apparently the original screenplay was like 195 pages or something.
Yeah,
like
and the play itself is a long one.
Yeah.
And this movie is 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Right.
And it just keeps. Like, it's not like they're pausing.
No.
They're not speaking slowly.
Yeah, this is not Harold Pinter.
They are talking, 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 and talking, and talking, and talking, and talking, and talking. Then there's a little pause, and then they talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. The second, I'd say the last third of the film has less talk and more quiet, reflective moments.
Less talk, more soft rock.
Yeah. But this is a play.
Yes. Boy, howdy.
On film. And it is mostly, because it is a domestic drama, it is, its world is very small. It's set in the house. It's set in the backyard. And that's mostly it. You occasionally see Denzel Washington at his job as a garbage collector, and he's riding on the back of the truck with the man, the actor, last name is Henderson. I'm very sorry that I'm blanking on this right now. Steven Henderson.
Yes.
That is his name. You've seen him in a million things.
Yes.
You look at that guy and you go, oh, that guy.
That guy.
So, it is set in the 50s. Denzel's character is a man who is taking care of his family as best he can. He's had a hard life. He has served time in prison. He got out of prison. He got the job. You know, he's bucking for a promotion.
He was a pro baseball player in the days before the major leagues were integrated.
Yes.
And is still bitter about that, which becomes manifested when his son is possibly going to be offered a football scholarship.
He is very hard on the son.
Yeah.
And does not want the son to experience the same disappointment that he experienced in life. So he bullies the son into, you know, behaving as he wants him to behave.
Right.
And intervenes in the son's opportunities in a way that is unfair to the son, because he cannot see beyond his own fear for the son. Meanwhile, Viola Davis is the long-suffering wife. Mm-hmm. And then things happen. They're not good things. And it stretches the family to the breaking point.
And you learn more about Denzel's character that's kind of like...
Not so great.
Yeah.
He's not always a good guy.
Yeah.
He's sometimes, mostly infrequently, a good guy. But you feel for him anyway.
Sure.
Because his circumstances are incredibly difficult.
Yes.
I liked this. I admire it.
I think it is well done. The performances are all really exceptional. I'm glad it exists to capture those performances, which I'm sure on Broadway were electric and on film are also really powerful to watch.
Yeah.
There was a discussion on Twitter today between various critics where they were defending Denzel Washington's direction against people who were calling this movie out for feeling too much like a play.
Okay.
And they were saying that, oh, well, you know, when a movie does it, you know, deliberately like Locke or something, or like Vanya on 42nd Street, then we like it, but this for some reason, blah, blah, blah. I would say my issues with the movie feeling too stagey don't have anything to do with Denzel Washington and how he uses the screen. I mean, it's shot anamorphic.
Yeah.
So even though you're pretty much inside the house and in the backyard, like he's giving it some...
You don't feel oppressed by the space.
It's not like tons of close-ups. It's not like... He gives it some breathing room. The problem here is that August Wilson, adapting his own play, I don't think... I'm sure he knows, but doesn't care about the difference between a play and a movie. So in a play, you can have people gathering on stage talking about that significant thing that happened over there with those people over there that you're never going to see, but boy, that mattered, and now we're going to talk about how it affects us.
Right.
But in a movie, that just becomes like, why are you telling us all this stuff about
when
the thing
you could
just
show us? Right.
So that's... Right. That becomes exasperating. Like, watching this movie...
It did not become exasperating to me.
I mean, it didn't ruin the movie for me. But I'll tell you, watching this movie educated me as to what makes a play adaptation work and not work. And I realized at about the third conversation about a thing that happened over there with a character we didn't see, I was like, oh, that's it. That's what is missing here. That's why these often don't work. Is that rather than try and just show you that thing or work that thing into the pre-existing play, you continue this thing of, well, we have to be in the house or the backyard, so everything else just has to be covered in the dialogue. So it's not Washington's fault. It's, if we have to pin this on anybody, it's Wilson loving the play so much that he doesn't make the movie into something sui generis.
Well, you want his dialogue.
Of course.
As unnatural as his dialogue is, and it is unnatural. It is not the way people speak. People in their daily lives do not paint pictures with words.
Right.
Okay, and that
there's
is
a lot of raconteuring going on.
Yeah,
here.
Like there's a line, there's a sequence of the adult son is talking to the end of the film. You know, growing up in this house. He was like, referring to the father, he was like a shadow following me around all the time. And I'm like, okay. Like, I was used to it by that point.
Right.
Because I'd sat through 2 hours of the film already. But it was just yet another reminder of how poetic the dialogue is. And again, because this is such stylized speech.
Yeah.
You don't mind it. Unless you're going to hate it from the get-go.
No, and I'm not saying that the speech has to be different.
Right.
I'm saying write a couple of new scenes in that same style that just happen to take place elsewhere. With folks.
Well, you know? If you notice, at that two-thirds mark where it seems to be sort of like the end of Act Two or whatever.
Right.
As Denzel Washington's character becomes more broken down and isolated, the world of the film opens up. People are going in more places. They're moving in more directions. There are more locations for the action to take place. And so...
Yeah, but by that point...
So they are...
All the stuff has happened.
They are... Everyone except him...
Yes.
Is freer.
Is expanding their universe.
Now, because he has caused an irrevocable problem.
Right.
And
abdicated his responsibilities.
Yeah. And so they, in turn, you know, it hurts them, but their world has opened up, and the film moves in that direction, too.
Absolutely.
His direction allows for this as
definitely.
Well.
Definitely. No, I don't disagree with any of that. And people should see the movie. I mean, he's amazing, she's amazing, the supporting cast is all really good.
He really is a very generous director with her.
Yes.
Like, you can feel how kind of in awe he is of her. Because he's a solid... kind of actor. He's not the kind of actor that is really given to, you know,
florid
great heights and low lows. He just stays solid.
Right.
He won the Oscar for Training Day. It was actually the sorry we forgot to give it to you for Malcolm X.
Yeah.
Academy Award.
Sure.
And you know, he was terrific in Malcolm X.
Yeah. He's the one good thing in Training Day. I mean, it is a role that has given him as much license to ham as any.
Yes.
And the fact that he only goes so far with that is evidence of how strong an actor he is. Because I certainly don't think it was Antoine Fuqua reining him
in.
That's Washington's instinct.
So. Yeah, he's terrific. But she makes chills run down my spine.
Yes.
She... can stir up a storm, and it doesn't feel like it's too much ever.
Right.
She is fully human, even as she goes big, and as I watched the film, in my head, my EKG in my head is boop, 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 boop. Everyone's talking. This is good. These are good performances. This is fine. And then she has this moment where she swoops in and cleans house. And
it's like her moment in Doubt.
Yeah. And you're watching it and you're not taken out of the movie, but at the same time, you are thinking, oh God, Viola Davis. You're one of our greatest living actors. Oh my. I'm watching Viola Davis act. You know, she's something else.
Yeah. No, she's unquestionably phenomenal. And again, I you know, as much as I found myself getting impatient with the movie, it was impatient in a way of like, there's so much here that's so good. I wish that you were transcending your theatrical origin, but it kind of doesn't ever. Like it always, even when it does open up toward the end, it all still kind of feels stagey. And again, it's not because of Washington, it's because of how it's written. But that's not such a bad thing that it takes away all the other good things the film has to offer.
Yeah. So, you know, watch it.
Yeah, see it.
It's going to get some Academy Award nominations.
No question.
So you might as well watch it.
Yeah.
Looking at my list. Passengers. Should we wait and talk about Passengers at the end?
Do we think people know by now? It's been out for a couple of weeks. I think that people know.
Let's wait till the end anyway.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Patriots Day.
Okay.
It's set at the Boston Marathon bombing.
Right.
I have to tell you what happened at the press screening that I went to. There was a guy from CBS Films there. I don't know who he was. And he said two things. The first thing he said was that this is the most accurate, based on a true story film, that you would ever see. Because they did so much research and so much fact checking. And I thought, okay, great. The next thing he said was, take a Trump supporter and a Hillary supporter and they're going to hug each other when it's over. And I thought, you go to hell and you die.
That's so vomitous. I'm so glad I was not at that screening.
But I'll tell you something. Even as I watched the film and was really impressed with it, like Peter Berg has been watching Paul Greengrass over and over and over, because this is a really physical movie. You are in motion the entire time. It never slows down. It's riveting. It's a gut-kicking experience to watch this tragedy unfold. You can argue about whether it's exploitive or not. It might be. I don't know exactly. But here's the thing. It tricks you into thinking.
You got soup to stir?
I do have soup to go stir. I have soup on the stove right now. But I'm going to say this thing and then you can pause it.
Okay.
It tricks you into thinking that Mark Wahlberg's character wasn't fictional.
Yeah. No, that's true.
Now pause that while I go stir and we'll keep talking about this when I come back. We are now back. I have stirred the soup. I am making split yellow lentil. Split yellow pea. Yellow split pea soup from the Nigella Lawson cookbook with the chili and the ginger and the limes.
It's very tasty.
It's real nice.
I have thoughts about Patriots Day.
Little green onions.
I have to say, when I saw it, I mean, the thing is, Peter Berg is really good at these movies, even though these movies are kind of reprehensible. Marky Mark saves the world with the help of a bunch of guys in uniform.
He does have... Mr. Wahlberg does seem to have a bit of a problem with...
A messiah complex?
His own inserting himself into traumatic historical events and...
Surviving and
fixing
saving.
Fixing things, yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, they just cranked out Deepwater Horizon. Like, that movie premiered at the Toronto Film Festival in September, and then Patriot's Day premiered at AFI in November. So they just, like, wham-bammed these two right out. And yeah, the character that Mark Wahlberg plays is apparently completely fictional, but he managed to be, like, at all the places at all the right times and tell all the people all the right things.
Right.
And, like, have everybody talk about how great he is. Which I did not catch at the time because I thought, wow, what a great procedural. You know, clearly a lot of research went into this.
Right.
And then, I mean, I was not at your screening, so I didn't get that speech. But yeah, there have been several great reviews out of the Boston area that are not amused.
Furious.
Yeah. They're really taking this movie to task. And so, yeah, from that angle, it's ridiculous and reprehensible. However, as a procedural, if you're willing to sort of bypass the whole notion of truthiness, it's effective filmmaking. It's suspenseful and it's interesting and it moves along at an interesting clip. And there's a ton of characters to keep track of. So they cast people like, you know, Kevin Bacon or J.K. Simmons, who you just immediately know who they are and log onto them. And, you know, Supergirl plays the wife of one of the brothers. And, you know, she gets interrogated by an FBI agent played by Candy Alexander. And that's a really cool scene. And, you know, Berg is an effective filmmaker. I didn't even mind Battleship that much. I know that became a movie that everybody liked to dump on, but I was never bored by it, you know.
I liked it when they battleshipped.
And like Lone Survivor, I came away from that movie thinking, wow, what a potent anti-war metaphor.
Well, Lone Survivor, very much like American Sniper, could be read by the viewer.
Yes,
the beholder. As the viewer wishes to read it.
I suppose so.
That's true.
Yeah, so I came away from that movie thinking, "Oh, what a brilliant portrayal of the futility of war." But no, that's not what they had in mind. But that's what I got out of it. That's the thing about Patriot's Day. If you sort of go along with the fact that the Marky Mark character is a complete fabrication and that this is not how all of this stuff went down, as a movie, as a suspenseful kind of policier, it works.
I very briefly would like to defend the idea of a fictional Mark Wahlberg.
Okay.
Okay.
Mark Wahlberg exists, Dave. You have to wrap your head around that.
I know. There's a reality show about him and his family.
You're right.
Yeah. There's also a reality show about his brother and his wife.
And there was also
Jenny McCarthy and Donnie have their own reality show.
Oh, God. Is she still on about the vaccines?
Probably.
And there was also an HBO show that was thinly veiled on his life.
Correct.
As well, so.
Very much, don't everybody yell at me, but very much like Stonewall. Okay. It helps narratively. If you want to make a specific kind of film, one where you follow a character through an event, it helps to have a character that the audience can put their stuff onto. Okay. Now, unlike Stonewall, this is a pretty good movie. However, much like Stonewall... They pick a person to be the fictional through line who comes with a set of problems. You know, in Stonewall, it was this fresh-faced, pretty young,
off the farm,
cisgender white boy.
Yeah.
Okay. In this movie, it's Mark Wahlberg, who is a fine actor, but again, as I just said, whose personal life in the world lets us know his feelings about things quite a bit. Like, because of social media and because he doesn't sometimes have a filter, he says things like, if I'd been on that plane at 9/11, things would have gone differently. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself when I heard him say that, you're an idiot and you should shut up.
Yes.
So... I feel weird when he heroicizes himself. I know that's not really a word. Considering that his own past involves bad behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying I'm putting that very lightly.
Right.
Brushes
with the law.
Harm caused to other human beings.
Yes.
And it feels like he's sort of exercising his own guilt sometimes about, you know,
his youth,
past misdeeds in his youth, you know, silliness at the beginning of his career, and there was ample silliness at the beginning of his career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stepping into gravitas, you know, not for the sake of the role, but for himself. I don't want to say that I know his motives.
No, but...
But it feels weird sometimes...
It does, because...
When I watch him.
It's like, dude, you got an Oscar nomination for being in a Scorsese movie.
Right.
You don't have to keep, like...
Right.
Chiseling yourself onto Mount Rushmore.
I just feel a weird little bit of discomfort.
We aren't still thinking about
him.
Good Vibrations. We've
yeah.
moved
well,
on
I,
as a culture.
I am still thinking
well,
about
I mean,
Good
sure,
Vibrations.
We think about it, but
because
you know what I'm
I will never stop thinking about Lolita Holloway.
Of course. But I'm just saying, we know there's more in that paint box.
I do know that. And I just...
But he doesn't know that we know that.
I just feel weird sometimes. He gives me a bit of the uncomfortables every once in a while.
No, absolutely.
Because... yeah.
Yeah.
That stuff.
But it's competently made.
But it's a pretty good movie.
Yeah.
Patriots Day.
Yeah.
If you'll forgive the fact that his character is not a real person at all.
Yes.
And maybe if you don't live in Boston, and maybe if you didn't know anybody who got killed, and maybe if you
have
a lot
somewhat
of things.
Vague notion about what happened.
A lot
oh,
of things,
also,
yeah.
The other thing about the movie that annoyed me was that, like, Boston is put under martial law, although apparently they didn't find the guys until after they lifted martial
correct.
Law.
Correct,
and there was a lot of stuff about, like, not reading them their Miranda rights. Like, it delves
yeah,
into...
They really did make a They took a little bit of glee in denying the Muslim woman her Miranda rights.
Yeah. So the movie kind of dips its toe into the complicated world of post 9/11, like, you know, constitutional rights and a war on terror style ignoring of the Bill of Rights, and then
yeah.
runs away as quickly as possible, lest
right.
we think about it for more than a second.
Yeah. Okay. Passengers.
Okay. Now, should we do like I get the tail end, like after letters and stuff, or
do you want to read a couple letters?
Let's
and then
do some
passengers?
Letters, and then we'll do passengers.
All right. I'm going to get the letters.
We think you
here.
Know what happens in Passengers, and
but
what
we don't want to.
And as Bibbs pointed
assume
out,
assume that you know.
As Bibbs pointed out, what happens in Passengers can't be considered a spoiler because it happens in the first third.
I understand
it's,
that.
Just let me finish.
I know.
I'm telling
know.
Them. All I know
right.
you know.
Yes.
But because the studio has very craftily avoided telling this part of the plot in all of the promotional materials, it feels like a spoiler in the same way that the collateral beauty twists felt like a spoiler because they were being kept secret by the studio because they were terrible. So that's the same deal with Passengers. Do you have a DVD pick this week, by the way?
No. Well, here, okay. I don't have a DVD pick, but I have a streaming pick
okay.
for you. All right. We are not going to talk about it in this episode. But there are two films that are streaming that you should watch because we're going to talk about them this week when we record extra episodes in the purpose
of the catch-up.
In the pursuit of catching up.
Yes.
Like every film critic, at the end of the year, there are films that you missed.
Yes.
And you, before you make a list or before someone asks you the question, you want to get to the films that are on your, oh, I missed this and I want to get to it, you know, stack. So,
which, you know, you talk about your bubble that keeps you from knowing, like, spoilers of superhero movies and stuff. Both of these movies that you were like, oh, I gotta need to see these before the year's over, I had never heard of either of them, and I haven't heard anybody talking about them.
Well,
so we have,
you know,
different
bubbles. When you're a really high-level esthete like
uh-huh,
me...
You're next level, Dave White.
You... These things... Alonso, this is like the air I breathe. It's not a choice. It's who I am. Come on.
Now you're misquoting Sondheim to serve your purposes.
Whatever. Okay. Neon Bull, a Brazilian film, played in Los Angeles for a week this past spring.
Not to be confused with the Neon Demon.
Yeah, I missed it, and I marked it down as something I missed and wanted to catch up on. Now it's streaming. It's on iTunes, and you can watch it. I highly recommend it. It's beautiful and strange.
We'll talk about it.
Then I also watched, and you watched with me, an even stranger film called For the Plasma, which I had come recommended to me by weirdos on film Twitter. And the weirdos on film Twitter did not steer me wrong.
Yeah, we'll talk about that too.
So, watch Neon Bull and watch For the Plasma, and then you'll come back and listen to us talk about them later this week.
My pick is Vanya on 42nd Street, because if we're talking about theatrical adaptations that lean in hard on the theatricalness, that's a movie that does it for sure, and I think very, very effectively. So,
and here's an email from Tim in Baltimore. Good morning, boys. Oh dear, I plead guilty for upping the ante in gift giving with the arrival of those burgers cookies. I'm sorry, did we get more burgers cookies this year?
No, it's been a while.
He didn't send us any this year?
No.
What's the problem, Tim, in Baltimore? Why don't we have more burgers cookies in our mouths?
He's coasting on that other box.
Yeah. if you ever get on the East Coast, drop me a line. Burgers make cakes, too.
Oh,
cakes, 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 cakes. This is from Jennifer. It says, a question from 4-star Jennifer. Dear guys, I get what you said about poor white people voting for Trump, but what about all the rich people? Well, them too. In fact, well, hang on. I'll finish reading the letter.
Read the letter first.
This was sent on November 14th, and we may have actually already addressed this, but in case we didn't or in case you didn't hear it, we'll address it again. For weeks and weeks, I've passed mansions and near mansions with Trump signs plastered everywhere, and I grit my teeth. Now that the worst has happened, I'm trying to figure out what they had to gain. Is it taxes, religious conservatism, fiscal conservatism? What can they possibly like about a nearly inarticulate buffoon? I don't get it.
Taxes. It's all money.
Yeah, it's about money.
All they care about.
Poor white people voted for him for a set of reasons. Rich white people voted for him for another set of reasons.
And the rich white people are less likely to be disappointed by what he eventually does.
I've recently read what I consider to be a fairly true sounding analysis of what white people who voted for him are thinking. Mm-hmm. And the story goes something like this. Rich or poor, they think of themselves as waiting in a line. And the line, at the end of the line, is the big light where you get the things you need and want from the United States, as a citizen of the United States. And they feel as though, through no fault of their own, other people are cutting in line. Yeah. Now, what they fail to understand is that
they've been cutting.
They are the ones who were cutting in line the whole time by virtue of their existence.
Right.
They were walking on the heads of the people that they think are cutting in line. And they didn't even know they were walking on the heads of those people, maybe. Or maybe they did know and they didn't care. But let's just assume the best in people. Let's assume the best in people and think that they did not know they were walking on the heads of the people that they now consider to be cutting in line.
They just thought they were standing where they were supposed to be.
They just thought they were standing where they were supposed to be, and now they see people cutting in line. And those people are people of color, and they are immigrants, and they are people with weird religions that they don't understand, and they are
women,
uppity women, and homosexuals, and all the people that should be quiet and behave.
And get behind them.
And get behind them in line. This makes sense to me.
It's gross, but there it is.
So now for the next 4 years, we have to fight this giant baby person, which is what he is.
Yes.
And if you're listening to this show for the first time and you don't like our politics, beat it, because that's what it is in this house. We don't need you as a listener. Yeah. When the election first happened and I said poor people, I was thinking about my own, you know, background. Mm-hmm. I know those folks. Mm-hmm. I know the poor white people. And they, you know, they feel disenfranchised, but also they're complete racists. And they hate everything that isn't what they are.
And the rich white people are
And the rich white people are the racists. Same. They just have money and they're jerks.
Yeah, and they want to keep more of it.
Yeah. Here's another letter from Sarah. Sarah with two A's. Sarah.
Oh, we've been over this. I forget, I know. But she's our Finnish fan.
Hi, David Alonso. It's your Finnish listener here. I think we have more than one.
Okay, well, she's the one who keeps writing.
Yeah.
Bless.
I'm pretty sure I was going to write you an email about something important about a month ago, but then I happened to go see Christian Mungiu's new film, Baccalaureate, which has not opened here.
No, it doesn't have a distributor yet.
It left me so emotionally devastated for a few days that I completely forgot whatever it was I thought I had to say. I can't wait to hear you talk about this film eventually. Oh, we will.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm a big fan of Christian Mungiu. As a smug Northern European who enjoys an unfairly comfortable existence... The movie was a rather harrowing experience, and I'm sure Eastern European audiences will find enjoyment in the black humor, so I wonder what your take will be. Anyway, I thought I'd drop a line since I finally had the chance to see The Wailing last night at a midnight screening. I've been waiting patiently to see this movie ever since Dave sang its praises earlier in the year, and it did not disappoint. Oh my God, you saw it at a midnight screening?
It's long, it's right?
It's 2 hours and like 40 minutes. Ooh. 2.5 at least.
Well, it's Finland. The sun stayed out the whole time. It's like going to a matinee.
It's, no one has any concept of time in Finland. It's just always...
It's like Vegas.
It's daytime all the time, so everyone's just awake. Always and happy. Temperature's nice.
Eating herring. Yeah. I don't know anything.
I was expecting to love all the bloody, demonic, metal rake to the head awesomeness, but I also found myself weirdly moved by the end of it. Yeah. Yes, this movie is extravagantly weird and incredibly satisfying.
I still need to see it.
She continues, my experience was also somewhat enhanced by the person sitting next to me. I guessed from the conversation she was having with her friend before the movie that she wasn't really a horror fan, but simply interested in Korean culture, happy to see a Korean movie at a multiplex. This became more apparent as the movie progressed, causing her to twitch and cower before the disgusting boils, the skin chewing, and the shamanistic animal sacrifices.
Oh my.
By the end of the movie, she had wrapped her woolen scarf all over her head and was only carefully peeking out at the screen.
I need to start bringing a woolen scarf to horror movies.
I felt a little sorry for her, but I mostly found myself vicariously enjoying her experience. It's always fun to see horror movies next to people who are genuinely gripped by them. Oh, I know. I just hope she wasn't scarred for life. Another thing, your t-shirts. Do you ship all the way to Finland? We do. If you do, I'd love to buy a shirt from you guys. Oh, wait! She goes and talks about how to pronounce her name! Here we go! You wondered about the pronunciation of my name last time. I just did it again. You get pretty close if you try to say Sahara with the stress on the first syllable.
Sahara?
Sahara instead of Sahara. But really, Sarah is completely fine. Sahara. Sahara.
Sahara.
Sahara.
Sahara.
Sahara. I'm just going to keep trying it until I get it right.
Okay. Did we send her a shirt? Did we work?
Not yet. No.
Oh, good heavens! We'll
I'll email you personally, Sarah, and then we'll figure it out.
Yes.
This is from Charlie. Oh, Charlie from Cinefamily.
Yeah.
Hey, Charlie from Cine Family. He said this on November 10th. Sorry, 6 weeks late. Sorry, Charlie from Cine Family. Hey, Dave and Alonzo. Charlie from Cine Family here. Thank you for bringing Matt Zoller's sights on recently. I was out of town when he was at the theater, super bummed, so I was pleasantly surprised he popped up on the podcast. I listened to it while driving through the mountains outside of Salt Lake City. Anyway, I found myself fascinated by the discussion y'all had about the thematic dissonance in Mel Gibson's films, about how he can't seem to reconcile his spiritual needs for grace and forgiveness with his very earthly needs for sex and violence and drink, too, I guess. In light of that, I decided to rewatch Braveheart, which I probably hadn't seen since I was 11 or 12. It is so problematic, but also incredibly interesting. Of course, I'd forgotten how insanely violent it is. There's this whole atmosphere of socialized male aggression in the film's world that defines not just their glories on the battlefield, but their day-to-day life, too, and their love. The protagonist picks fights just as glibly with the English crown as he does among his men to stir up morale. It's hard to know where his line is. He clearly wants to be good in the eyes of God and his loved ones, but he really can't help his savage desire for freedom, which of course he pays for with rapturous body mutilation. You guys mentioned the almost Monty Python ridiculous violence in Hacksaw Ridge. That's all over Braveheart too, yeah. Not to mention the odd choice of punctuating what would be more quiet scenes with sudden actions like rock throwing and punching. And Gibson's body sense of humor even appears in the supposedly serious scenes of war and diplomacy. There's more arse in this movie than I think people remember. With the splatter scenes, it falls together like an Evil Dead film. I read that he drew from his experiences shooting action sequences in the Mad Max films to stage the battle scenes here, as well as researching NFL games. Strange choices, and they say a lot about Gibson. He is so ridiculous and then terrifyingly furious and then attempting to be disarmingly funny with a dick joke or something. I don't know what to think. Rewatching Braveheart, of course, reminded me of historical epics like Spartacus and Lawrence of Arabia. I could also see the sports and osploitation influences as well, but I also saw shades of The Seventh Seal and some of Pasolini's films with their pre-modern and spiritual occupations. It's under a lot of dead, dismembered bodies, but there's some soul-searching existentialism deep down in Gibson's films. Am I crazy for bringing Pasolini and Bergman into a discussion about Mel Gibson? Is Mel Gibson driving me insane?
No.
You are not crazy. You're accurate.
He's got a lot of things happening.
How should we seriously and artistically consider faith-based filmmakers that aren't making cheap Hallmark Channel-style movies and aren't Terrence Malick?
Hey, leave the Hallmark Channel out of this.
No, don't leave the Hallmark Channel out of this, especially when they bewilder the expectations that come with the Christian label. How do we reconcile a filmmaker who's sometimes grossly hateful, but also weirdly self-aware and sublimely unpredictable?
We keep
watching what he does, trying to sort him out.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. He's not fitting easily into any category, and he's doing a lot of things, and they're all complicated and often seemingly contradictory. But they're genuine. You know, his movies are sincere. Heaven knows. It'll be interesting, you know, we'll be talking about Silence after Dave sees it, and that's another movie I think that's sort of grappling with big faith issues. Gibson is all over the map, but he believes it, and he's certainly trying to do and say something which is more than a lot of filmmakers are bothering. So, I mean, even whether or not you agree with him, whether or not you think there's even a consistency to his worldview, at least he is trying to work something out here. Okay. I haven't seen Braveheart since it came out.
All right, let's talk about Passengers.
Okay, all right, so if you're turning off now, we were going to give away the goods on Passengers, so I just want to say real quick...
Goodbye.
No! We haven't been on in a week, so I need to, like, do my spiel.
All right.
I want to thank everybody for listening. Thank you, Blue, as always, for our great theme music.
Yes.
We really appreciate
it. Yes.
And it's, you know... It's part of the show. What can I tell you? Anyway, but we love it. And you can go find out more about Blue. His music is great. He's at bluetopia.com. BLEUTOPIA. Go check out our other friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Listen to the Rotten Tomatoes podcast. The the B-Movies podcast and Canceled Too Soon with Bibbs and Whitney, the Schmoes Know, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, the Comics Canon, the Sewers of Paris, oh God, it's been a while since I've done this. The Joel Ryan Thing, Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion Cast, Film Spotting SVU, Game Night Guys is no more.
Yeah, they quit.
They quit. They so quit doing their show. I can't say Game Night Guys anymore. And Secretly Timid.
Well, you know, our friend, the artist, Johnny Jungle Guts, has a new episode of Let's Gay.
That's true. His YouTube podcast.
It's on YouTube, and it's, vlogcast, and it's L3T Let. Let's
Gay. Let's Gay.
Yeah.
Oh, and speaking of the Sewers of Paris, Dave and I were on their year-end episode talking about some of our favorite pop culture moments of 2016, so check that out. Yeah. By the way, I should mention, I was on the Sofa Dogs with John Pavlich doing a feature-length commentary track for Die Hard 2, so do go please check that out. And thank you, Matt Zoller-Seitz, for having me on the Vulture TV podcast right before Christmas to talk about Christmas TV. So if you guys missed those episodes, go check them out, even though the holidays are behind us. You can follow this program on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at LinoleumCast.
Right.
You can subscribe for free at iTunes. Leave us a good review there, please. You can stream the show at Stitcher Radio, TheLounge.com, Podbean, CastBox, and Satchel. And if you are on the Android, we're on Google Play. And you can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. That's also the PayPal address if you wanted to buy shirts from us, but drop us a line
first. One of them black linoleum knife shirts.
Yes, make sure that we have your size, and if you're outside the U.S., we'll let you know how much the extra shipping is. Yeah. And of course, join our club at patreon.com/linoleumknife. You get LKTV and all kinds of other stuff. And
we're coming up on the one-year anniversary where things change.
That's right.
And
new stuff and things.
Before that change happens, we've got a month of club member things to get into your hands and do with you on the internet, content-wise. We're sliding into home.
Yes. We're gonna make
after
it all happen.
After a year of juggling it all. But all you members will know about these things very quickly. And this is the first of the year, and I've got information to dispense to you via Patreon. You go to Patreon, patreon.com/linoleumknife. It will explain everything to you.
And this week, be on the lookout. We'll have probably some more Linoleum Knife, and we're doing some more freebie LKTV, possibly.
We are.
You know, just as a kind of a holiday thing, and to let you know what you're missing if you were not a subscriber. So,
yeah.
All right.
But pretty much more of this, except we talk about
television.
The Bachelorette.
That, yes. And other things. All right, so goodbye, and if you want to hear us talk about about Passengers and Give It All Away,
then do that. Then not goodbye.
Right.
Okay, I want you to talk about the thing that Bibbs wrote.
Okay.
Which I felt was really smart and really true.
Yeah.
And was it encapsulated my ideas.
Yeah.
On the subject perfectly, about what is a spoiler and what is not a spoiler. Right. And what is cheating?
So Bibbs pointed out that the word spoiler has been greatly abused of late. Because technically a spoiler is something that if the person knows it, then there's no reason for them to see the movie. So like a spoiler is, you know, Mrs. Bates is actually Norman. You know, like that kind of thing. It's a big plot giveaway.
Yeah.
Both Collateral Beauty and Passengers adopted the strategy of hiding the awful thing that they are about in trailers that made the movies look far more innocuous than the movie actually turned out to be.
Yes.
Which then put critics in the uncomfortable position of saying, well, I need to be able to tell you why this movie is gross, but it's gross for a reason that you wouldn't know from the trailer, and so I guess it would technically be a spoiler, even though it's a thing that happens in the first act of the movie and is essential to the story. So that's pretty much what Passengers pulled on us. And if you've seen the trailer for Passengers, the premise is it's the future. And there's a spaceship taking human beings on a 120-year voyage to another planet. And everyone is supposed to be in deep sleep for that 120 years. And for some reason, we don't know why, Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence wake up too soon. And together, only they can save the ship as it steers into dangerous territory. that's not what happens.
Not the way they let you think it happens.
No.
Right.
So what happens in the movie Passengers is that 30 years into the 120-year voyage, Chris Pratt wakes up for no reason, unexplained. Turns out there are all kinds of weird hinky things going on in the ship because they've been battered by asteroids and whatnot. And now he is alone in this huge sort of cruise ship, you know, with no one to talk to except for a robot bartender played by Michael Sheen. Why a robot bartender would be set up and waiting to go for 120 years is never quite explained.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's the thing that's happening. And he starts kind of losing it and feeling super alone and abandoned. And then he starts noticing the other passengers, and one of them is Jennifer Lawrence. And wow, she's real attractive. And he watches her, like, video interview, and she's a writer, and she seems like a really fascinating person. And he becomes kind of fixated on her and decides that, like, they were meant to be together. And even though he knows it would be a horrible, horrible thing, and he tries to talk himself out of doing it, finally the loneliness is too much, and he wakes her up. And tells her that it was, oops, an accident, and gosh, the same thing happened to me.
Yeah.
That's creepy.
And then they fall in love, because they're the only two people around.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then, of course, she finds out what happened, and is rightly horrified.
And that, furious, yeah, and, yeah.
That he has essentially murdered her. He has doomed her to live and die on this ship, and not at the final destination that they're heading to. And then, only the two of them together with the help of,
Lawrence Fishburne,
who yeah. also randomly wakes up then suddenly, can fix everything. And then because it took the two of them to fix everything and they saved all the lives of the people on the ship, then it's all supposed to be okay that he did this terrible thing to her. And then he figures out a way that she could actually go back to sleep, but she chooses not to because she loves him, even though he did this terrible thing to her.
Yeah.
That's the movie.
Yeah.
It looks real nice. It's shot by the same guy who shot Silence, Rodrigo Prieto.
Mm.
And
gorgeous space production design.
Yes, all the stuff with the ship is very cool looking. Yep. And very, you know, believably futuristic.
And this movie almost gets away with it.
Because Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence are so damn photogenic and charming.
Yeah.
Like, my joke for this was if Danny McBride were in the Chris Pratt role, it wouldn't work at all.
Correct.
And or it would work if you would if this were being directed by Paul Verhoeven or, you know, like Michael Haneke or somebody who would actually delve into the horrible nature of the decision that this guy makes.
There is a really fascinating moral problem to be solved or at least explored
yes.
in this film. And the film has no interest in,
none.
In exploring that moral problem other than for someone to get upset for a while.
Yes.
Okay. If you had given it to someone, like you said, like Michael Haneke or Paul Verhoeven or Claire Denis, I always bring her into the sure. conversation because she's similarly unflinching.
Joaquin Trier.
Correct. You would have had a real movie.
Yeah.
Instead, you have a studio-driven product that thinks you're an idiot.
Yeah.
And doesn't care if you're angry about what you've just seen.
Because if you had made the movie in the trailer,
yeah.
where the two of them randomly wake up and then fall in love and have to save the ship,
yeah.
you could make that movie.
Yeah.
And it would work.
Yeah.
Or it could work anyway. Yeah. But to make this movie and not deal with the fact that you made this movie is nauseating.
Two things I love. I love that Bibbs held the director's feet to the fire during his junket
yes.
interview, which is apparent. You don't do that in a junket interview, and he did it anyway.
Yeah, this was like Louis Vertel
calling out
Will Ferrell and Kevin Hart
to their faces
yeah.
at the Get Hard junket.
Yeah.
So go, you guys. More of that, please. Secondly, I want to see this film remade with Danny McBride and Rachel Dratch.
And then she tries to murder
him. And then she chases him around the ship trying to murder him. That's the movie I want to watch.
We never get what we want.
The day is coming when I'm going to get everything I want.
All right, we'll be back with more late 2016 catch-ups very soon. Thanks for tuning in. We will talk to you guys next time.
Actual goodbye.